This is the August 22 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Aaron Curtis from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from Champaign County, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Next week, we'll be at the Farm Progress Show live up on stage in the Illinois tent. If you come in the main gate, that's just to the right. About a block and a half. It's really simple to find. Orion Samuelson will host a program at 10 o'clock. I'll be up at 2 o'clock, both of us for about an hour, and we have stage shows at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, noon, 1 and 2 o'clock right there at the Farm Progress Show. I kind of hope to see you in the University of Illinois tent. Now let's begin our discussion as we always do by getting a list of items we should take up for the day. Aaron Curtis from Midco, let's start with you. What's on your list?
Well, just curious what the farmers should be doing now with old crop, both corn and soybeans. There's still a little chunk of that still out there in farmers' hands, and the market's obviously set back a large amount here, and needs to be some decision making for some farmers next week with some possibility, some new minimums, at least on bushels that are in storage. And do you sell that? Do you roll it? That's a good, I guess, the question. I'd be curious what the other panelists have to recommend, and you know, what do we think the farmer may do with some of this old crop here as we move forward, as we approach the end of another month next week?
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, on your item list?
Well, I think the weather, this cool weather that's coming in the month of September that's predicted, and how are we going to finish this crop off is certainly real important to the end result of what we really do yield at the end of the day.
And Brian Stark.
I think the biggest thing, coincidentally, is new crop basis direction, coupled with, you know, weaker demand with a potentially shorter supply in the Eastern Corn Belt. How that plays out here over the course of the next 4 months is going to be interesting to me.
Okay, so I think I will start, Brian Stark, with you and see if you can't give Aaron a good answer to some of these questions, since both of you are in the elevator business and he clearly needs to know what is going on. So what are your thoughts? What should farmers do with old crop, and how are you as the manager there at the Andersons handling this?
I think the biggest thing for the producer right now, obviously he's a little numb from the USDA report that's been talked about ad nauseum the last couple of weeks. I think he really has to think back and see, am I carrying gambling stocks? Am I carrying, you know, a decent share of my 2018 crops still unpriced? I think that matters when you think about what we do moving forward. I think most people will tell you that there's still some questions regarding yield. To Chuck's point, well, how's the crop going to finish? We know it's really late in parts of the belt. And I think it goes back to the adage for me, since I entered the grain business years ago, that it's really hard to bet long on multiple crop years. And I think you have to really look at the risk component to that, which goes back to how much we're really carrying. On the flip side, you know, I think you have to look at the fact that we've kind of tried to test the lows in the September-December contract, and we've held them so far. I think that's the question of with the crop, where it stands today and how it's going to finish. But I think it's got to be a mixture. I'm okay with carrying a little bit of old crop forward, given where we are on the charts. But I think a producer really has to look at what that percentage is. And if he's carrying a lot of old length and he doesn't have a lot of new crops sold, I really think he needs to mitigate some of that risk by letting some go.
I'll stay with you for a moment, Brian, but I do want Aaron to ask this too. So what will be the charges moving from old crop to new crop if you're already in the elevator?
Well, I think that's something that we're working through right now. I haven't quite pinned it down. I think harvest is late. So, you know, do new charges need to come out September 1? Certainly a possibility. Do they get extended because harvest doesn't start under normal circumstances? We'll figure that out in the next week. We haven't quite pinned that down. I will say it'll probably be less on corn than what we're used to seeing, just given the expectation of a a below average crop. I'm not saying it's horrible, but certainly smaller than the last few years. So the producer will have to deal with that. But at the same time, I think he has to historically look on at a basis play too. Basis levels have been firm for the last 30 to 60 days. We've seen them come off their highs with some of the ethanol plants in the east idling or reducing grind. I think that, but their levels are still attractive. So if he doesn't want to take on new crop storage rates, I think there's certainly an opportunity to potentially look at putting it on a basis contract.
Is there potentially much of a difference between the date when those will go into effect between, for instance, the Andersons here in Champaign and then in Delphi and then as you go further to the east?
I think they're going to be comparable. I think, you know, right now I would anticipate telling the customer to expect the new rates to be in effect at the beginning of September like usual and play forward from there. And so that goes back to my point that the charges may not be as high as they've been in the past, but even if it's something that the producer doesn't, he wants to carry some of his old crop forward, given where we are in the charts in the market today, you know, a basis play may not be a bad play if he doesn't want to pay the new charges.
And before I let you go, how much old crop do you think producers are holding?
I would say in general, somewhere around that 15 to 20% would catch most of them. There's just a few extremes either direction, but I think for the most part, guys have taken advantage of prices when they rallied here earlier this summer, but there's still, you know, a decent amount of stocks that guys have to really look at, you know, where they stand from a sold percentage on their 19 and measured against how long they really want to bet moving forward that this crop size is going to get smaller as time goes on and we have an opportunity for prices to hopefully rally this fall.
Aaron, your answers to that series of questions with starting with the in charges and how much old crop is around and such.
Well, I think the in charges are going to be pretty variable, and Brian's right. Still some decisions to be made here as we move into next week, but I think we're going to see quite a bit of variability on that. The old traditional way was typically September 1st, but a lot of that's changed over the last few years. We've seen some of that being extended to different dates as we move into either September 15th, October 1st. It's going to be pretty variable moving around, but I think, I agree with Brian. I think you got to kind of manage your risk here. If you look at the charts the last few years, you can identify kind of the low on corn is has been kind of consistent with that decision point where the farmers kind of had to, you know, thrown in the towel on some of this old crop, and you got to kind of weigh the risk versus the cost here moving forward. The market has stabilized, like you mentioned, but here we are with East Corn, setting just 6 or 7 cents off the contract low and back to where we kind of started this whole thing in May. So I think, you know, personally, we're going to continue to see some support through this area, some sort of stabilization, but you know, you just got to factor in what your cost is going to be on paying these new rollover charges if they'd apply to your area and what you really think this market can really do on the upside. And also agree with Brian that there's some opportunities in here to lock into basis because that has, you know, at this time of year, historically, the last 5 or 6 years, it's pretty strong, especially as we move from here east.
Chuck Shelby, your assessments?
Well, I think producers have gone this far. I would probably be more inclined to take the good basis, take the money, and then look at buying back, you know, on the board. You know, take the amount of money it would cost you to make a roll or make a move, get your money, and you know, there's some extremely cheap options out there if you want to go that way, or if you want to replace a 1-to-1. Just, you know, we're at these near contract lows. It makes sense really to, you know, maybe take a futures position and replace your cash.
So this, Chuck, is not the first time that we have in recent years thought about a short crop in the eastern Corn Belt, though it was mostly eastern Indiana and Ohio the last time around. How did that impact you and your clientele?
Well, when we look at it, I think we're talking about guys who have held on to old crop, you know, they're really concerned what kind of yield they're going to have. So some of them are maybe holding on to replace some bushels they did for a contract, really concerned about what their crop's going to be. And I think another point to discuss here is how late this crop really is. When are we really going to see, a significant amount of corn get harvested? It may well be into the middle of October before we really, you know, get the corn dried down where guys really want to go after it. So there's a lot of components involved in this year that are so unique. A lot of areas of Indiana, guys had prevent plant. I know they're not going to have as many corn acres and not as many bushels to sell right there. And then if they have a poor yield. So really a lot of uncertainty going forward, Todd. And I think it just makes it a difficult decision all around for what producers need to do.
Aaron, I've been thinking about this crop as two different crops, May and June, or old, what I call first crop and Safrina, or second crop, for a while. From your perspective, do you see that the first crop, a better crop, probably, clearly, I think, will there be quick ships for that this year? And how do you as a trying to manage it coming into the elevator system, think about what needs to be done with it? Do you ship it out, and then you've got drying capacity and all kinds of things for the later crop that comes in to deal with too?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going to be quite an interesting harvest, not only in terms of yield variability, but just in terms of, you know, what quality could be and what drying is going to be. The way it looks now, it's going to be a wet crop, and the farmer's going to have to kind of manage how aggressive he wants to get going after this crop. But some of that stuff planted in late April, we expect some harvest to happen at least through the central and southern part of the state, maybe that third week in September, which is going to be a week to 10 days later than normal. But, you know, really get into October before we really get into the thrust of harvest. So there's going to be probably some continued volatility in basis, I would say, Todd, as we kind of get into the thrust of harvest, and that may present some opportunities for the producer to take advantage of that. But really, it's kind of an unknown here at this point with another month to go before we really get into harvest. But I think basis volatility is going to be kind of the name of the game and a new norm here as we move through this next marketing year, as we continue to balance kind of this east versus west production challenges that we've had, with better crops looks like in the west versus poor crops in the east. And that's going to continue to be something to keep track of here as we move through this whole next marketing year.
Can you explain the basis volatility you think that might be coming, and how it might differ than, you know, I understand, you know, when an ethanol plant might need corn, it's going to pop, but I don't think that's the kind of volatility you're talking about this fall.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen it, right, with these southeast rail values, you know, kind of peaking here a few weeks ago and backing off, and now they've kind of stabilized again. But we've seen some pretty large moves, you know, 20 to 30 cent moves in basis, and that's typically not typical for basis. Typically, the producer has much more risk, right, on the future side than basis. Basis is typically much more predictable, much more seasonal. So we've seen some improvement in Western basis here this week, some, you know, nickel to 10 cent improvements in some corn basis out in the West, because the farmer just is not moving anything. Cash movement continues to be pretty light. So, and then we talk about moving corn, right, from the West to the East and what we call across Chicago through those rail markets. And that's going to be something to watch. And then, of course, we've always got the dynamic of South American corn moving up into that southeast market as well. So there's going to be a lot of different moving parts. Typically, when we have short crops like this, corn moves to where it needs to move to, and that traditionally is a component of basis volatility and how basis responds. So, you know, as usual, Todd, more things to keep track of here as we move through this year.
I was going to go to Brian to have him talk about basis, and I'll let him do this momentarily, but you said short crop. It doesn't sound like it's that short, at least not from USDA's and pro farmers' look at it.
Yeah, well, it's going to be short in some areas, right? Some of our elevator customers, obviously in northwest Ohio, they got 25 to 30% of their corn planted, right? Those processors out there, you know, currently bidding 60 to 70 over, right? There's just not much corn moving. The farmer is very apprehensive on moving anything old crop wise, just because he doesn't know what his new crop's going to be. And that's obviously going to be considerably less than what we've had before. So that's what basis is going to continue to try to have to manage, is some of these areas that have short crops, typically those Indiana, Ohio markets feed those southeast feeder markets by rail. And then, you know, without that corn there, that those rail markets have had to push back into Illinois and keep those markets firm. And that continues to play, you know, kind of a rising tide for processor markets as well. You know, the river market on the export side is pretty much non-existent. Our export program's pretty slow, but the domestic processor market continues to drive basis here from here east. And, you know, you got to continue to feed some of those ethanol plants to the east, even without some production. So basis has to try to do some of that work. And that's why we've seen basis values in those shorter crop areas continue to be well supported.
Brian, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, to the point of, I think, you know, you asked about short crop. I think that's to be determined. I think the government, as of now, feels good about yield. Pro Farmer seems to be coming in somewhere close. But I think the key variable of all of this is it's late. And I think that from an end user perspective, the one thing I'll add to the basis comment is that when we saw the real big volatility this summer was based on the fact that not only do you have areas that are deficit with demand, but you also had a crop that was potentially going to be short. And so there was panic. And for the last four or five, even longer years, most of the end users have been living hand to mouth and buying their grain just like that. And the minute they feel like they're in trouble, that's when you get basis volatility to really peak up and they start looking out into the deferred. So I'm expecting some volatility not only to come up with the shortened areas like in the east, but also as we discover and see harvest progress and is the crop make it to maturity. You know, there's a decent chunk was planted in June. If we avoid those early frosts or even normal frosts in some examples, and then how deficit really are we? And there's certainly going to be opportunities, to Aaron's point, that I think those eastern areas are going to be strong, having to move corn from where it isn't or from where it is to where it isn't. And that's where I see potential more volatility there than maybe even on the future side as we move forward here in the next few months.
Okay, Chuck, I just took a look at basis for my local grain elevator delivery through December. Well, for December, not at fall delivery, is 9 under. That's probably going to be something that shows up quite a few places. Do producers need to act on this in some way?
At this point, Todd, I don't think so. I think there's still too many unknowns. I don't, in the Eastern Corn Belt anyway, I don't know a lot of producers that are willing to, you know, step up at this point and say, I'm confident when my crop's going to be ready to harvest. And I think there's still a long ways to go. I think what you're going to see from Pro Farmer, they're going to have qualifications based on this is what we think it is today. But as you know, the South Dakota crop is very immature. Even in the east, we have some of that and across the belt. So in my mind, with the weather, the way it looks, being cooler than normal, do we have enough heat units to really finish this crop off? So I think there's just too many unknowns to really step out, you know, very aggressively. If a guy's in an area he's comfortable with his crop, yeah, probably may take a look at doing some things. But for most producers in the Eastern Corn Belt, I think it's just too early to try to step out and make a decision like that.
No, in my instance, our current December bid's 10 over the December, and January's 5 over the March. There's about a 7-cent carry. So, but historically, very strong basis for the deferreds, and that's based on where we see end-user values out that far. And I think there's an element of, you look at historics where you might be looking somewhere in the 10 to 15 under the March range for January, you know, we're roughly about 15 to 20 cents higher than that. And that's a product of the unknown of really where this crop size falls because of the lateness, not necessarily the potential, but the lateness of where the crop's going to come in. And I'm sure those values will change over the course of time. So depending on the area the producer's in, you know, if he feels really good about that, historically, that's a really good basis. So I would not talk anyone out of locking it in. But at the same time, I'm with Chuck with so much unknown. There's limited risk for the basis in my mind to have a lot of downside pressure right now.
To both points, right, it's going to continue to be very variable as we move across the country. You know, you get out further west and, you know, maybe less extreme of needing any of that grain nearby, or you get further west, and that market's going to be inverted where they kind of continue to need some cash nearby or to meet some needs. So like we talked earlier, basis variability is going to be pretty extreme across the corn belt, just depending on where supply and demand are in those local markets. So I think you're going to continue to see just some basis that maybe doesn't make a lot of sense in some spots, and that's going to continue to be the case here as we move forward. They continue to try to get, you know, this not only variability, but just kind of this uncertainty to play out here as we move forward.
So what I think I hear all three of you saying is that the time value is worth more than what the narrowing of the basis is at this point. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. It's just too early to, in a crop that is historically late, to make decisions that lock you into something that is still an unknown.
What do you think about soybeans?
Well, that's an interesting scenario. It's kind of been overshadowed by corn. When you look at the amount of pods that are much less across, you know, the country, and the lateness of the crop, you can fill the bean pods that are there now, and the rain certainly helped do that, but you cannot create more pods at this point in time that are going to fill out. We're just out of time to do that, especially with this kind of weather. So looking forward, opinion is that the bean yield is going to come down pretty significantly from where we are, and I think there's just no way you can work around the lower pod count at this date.
How about Aaron?
I agree with Chuck. I think it's still kind of a sleeping market here. It's been largely forgotten, but you know, the pod counts and the lateness of the crop are kind of, I think, show up in yield as well. I think we're using a yield that's a bushel and a half, two bushels less than what the USDA is. So I think continue to be patient. I still think there's some upside here as we get into harvest on soybeans. I mean, the concern continues to be the fact that we're starting with a fairly large carryout. It's going to tighten up some here as we move forward, and obviously export demand continues to be a concern as well, but still think there's some production adjustment coming that's going to continue to keep some support underneath this bean market.
Will that production adjustment be reflected, Brian, early enough in the futures market for producers who generally would sell a larger part of their bean crop across the scale?
I'm not convinced that it might be, and simply because, to Aaron and Chuck's point, the crop is really late, and I don't know if we're going to have a good handle of actual yields until middle to late October on some of these beans. That's the challenge, and I think, you know, one thing I struggle with, I agree with the fact that I think there's a floor, and it's kind of been the ignored commodity. It's just a question, too, of how small the crop size really is on beans, whether we'll be able to even paint a scenario where the futures market has to rally much, simply because of how poor our demand base on the export side has been, and it doesn't look like there's any better insight moving forward. So even if you knock another couple hundred million off, you're still looking at a half a billion bushel carryover. It's hard to get really bullish beans, although I do think that, you know, $9 may not be out of the question if the crop size does get smaller as time goes on.
I think across the whole of the Midwest, the bean crop, most would say, is in generally the same condition, though they would not say that's the case for the corn crop. Pro Farmer, as Tour appears to say, Iowa's corn crop is in pretty good condition. Nebraska's corn crop is in good condition. If number one and number three, Iowa and Nebraska, are in that good of condition, Is that reflected in what you're talking about for the corn market here, or do you have to adjust as you go to the west?
Well, I think you have to adjust a little bit as you go to the west. I mean, obviously, I've said all along, I think if you add up, you know, the problems that we saw in Ohio, Indiana, and even South Dakota, it really comes down to Illinois for me. You know, we know Iowa and Nebraska's crop are going to be pretty decent, and it's not surprising what Pro Farmer has found. I think ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, is the Pro Farmer close to where the Illinois corn yield is, because Illinois can impact the needle of the size of the crop more so than some of these other smaller producing states. So it's always been about where Illinois is, because that's been one of the challenged areas, not as challenged as Indiana and Ohio, but certainly one that could potentially move the needle if for some reason we get some surprises as the combines roll here moving forward.
So, Chuck, in Illinois, they went through the best areas. They ignore southern Illinois, which in previous times has not raised enough corn to really move the needle in Illinois. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. And Sherman's probably had some discussions with what it looks like in his area and a good portion of the way down. Is that a big enough problem to reflect a lower yield than what ProFarmer has come up with and maybe what USDA is thinking about already?
Well, I think part of the Illinois picture would be, you know, the amount of prevent plant and some of the areas of Illinois that are, you know, really struggled and have a lot of prevent plant. I think the way that, to me, what I'm trying to look at this crop, when last year across the country we had pretty much ideal conditions and had, you know, a really good yield. So when you look at the numbers from USDA and some of the crop tour numbers, you look at that and you go, gosh, is it only that much less, or should it be, you know, a bigger percentage? So I guess I'm kind of in the camp that the it's less than what we're looking at, and I really kind of qualify that with how this weather at the end is going to finish off this crop, and I just don't see in certain states, including Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and South Dakota, that they can finish very well with cool temperatures, because that's your grain fill, your density, your kernel weight, your test weight. I just see those things lacking, and you really don't see those things till you run the combine, Todd, and that's just quite a ways away.
I think it's time to wrap up. Let's finish up. We'll get a final word from each of you. Brian Stark from the Andersons, I'll begin with you today.
I'll just go back to what I started the show with, and that is, you know, really looking, taking a deep look into your overall position relative to your sold percentage for 2019, and then what you're carrying for old crop. Obviously, being at the lows, I'm okay with hanging on to it, but I think you really have to measure the percentage of that old crop versus how much new you have to sell, so that we're not getting wrapped up betting long on both crop years.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
I think there's a long ways to go in this. I mean, I think farmers have been very frustrated by what's happened and all the things that are involved with that are out of their control. But we still got a long ways to go, and I think there'll be some opportunities where they can take advantage of going forward.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Well, I think the market's going to continue to be really quiet in here. Our next crop report, of course, September 12th, so we've got a few weeks to go. Till then, it feels like the market's trying to stabilize a little bit here down near contract lows on corn. But I still think there's some upside in corn, but it's really going to be pretty quiet over here. We really need to get closer to harvest to see it, not only how the crop finishes, but really what's out there once we get into harvest. So unfortunately, I think it's going to be a while before we really know what's out there with the lateness of the crop, but continue to expect some upside in corn here as we get on the backside of harvest, Todd.